Okay, I know what you're thinking. How can this be? That's an Advent reading. That's a Christmas reading. Come on, this is October. This is not a Halloween reading. Right? What in the world are they doing reading this text on this day? Well, this is the first week of our legacy campaign. All the month of October, on each Sunday, we're going to be talking about God's generosity and God's gifts. I think there is probably no greater gift that God has ever given the world than God's love embodied in the person of Jesus Christ. No more generous love has ever been known. And this is the story of how it came into the world, all because of a young Jewish girl. Now, when the angel appeared to Mary, she may not have had any sign that he was an angel at all. You see, we think of angels with wings and white robes, but angel in the Greek simply means messenger. He could have just been one other stranger who appeared and greeted her as if she were a queen. Hail, O favored one, God is with you. She was much perplexed by that. I would have been too, and she was probably a little bit scared. Because the very next thing the angel says is, don't be afraid. Maybe you saw it on her face. Because you see, the message he was about to deliver, the gift that she was about to receive, was not a gift that she had asked for or prayed for. It was not a gift that she wanted. She was betrothed, but she was not married. She did not want to be told that she was going to have a child. Not at this point. As the angel goes on to describe how this child is going to grow, what this child is going to do, it becomes pretty clear to Mary, who could have been as young as 13, 14, that this is going to require something of her. It's going to require that she be willing to give up and let go of pretty much everything in her life. She's going to have to let go of her reputation. She may have to let go of this marriage. The punishment for adultery was stoning to death. She might have to give up her life. And finally, the gift that she was about to receive was not something she would be able to hold on to. This was a gift not to Mary alone, but to the world. You see, it seems to me that this story is the most characteristic story of how God gives gifts. You see, we have grown up in a consumer society where we think everything is a transaction. Okay, God, if you do this for me, I'll do that for you. Or I'll do this for you if you do that for me. Doesn't work that way. If this story is any indication, and I think it is, often the gifts of God are things that we did not ask for. We did not pray for. We did not want. But they're still gifts. They come as gifts. Not as burdens. Not as punishments. Gifts. And one of the reasons that we don't ask for them, and one of the reasons that we don't pray for them and want them, is that God's gifts usually require something of us. Sometimes it requires that we give up something, a life that we thought would be, a career that we thought would be. And finally, when God gives gifts, they are never for ourselves alone. Remember, early on, God told Abraham and Sarah, your descendants will be blessed. in order to be a blessing to all nations. That's always attached. If we are blessed, it's to be a blessing to others. If we are given gifts, they're not to keep to ourselves, but they are to pass along to others. And God's generosity requires a response. Mary's first response, of course, is, how can this be? How can this incredibly crazy thing be? We've been asking that ever since, haven't we? And we ask it every time we receive one of those gifts from God that we didn't particularly desire. How can this be is a variation of why me? Why me? Why now? Why couldn't this be after the marriage? Why couldn't this be easier? Why couldn't this require less? As we talk about legacies, we receive so many legacies from our forebears. The hymns we sing, the scriptures we read, this place of worship, so many things that we just receive as a gift from God and a gift from our ancestors. But like every gift from God, it requires something of us. And what it requires of us is not for ourselves alone. This legacy campaign is about a great deal more than just raising $4.7 million. That's the goal. It's about cultivating a culture of generosity, a culture of gratitude, a culture that can move beyond how can this be? Because you see, when we receive this gift, we're expected to take care of it. We're not building a new building. We're taking care of what we already have because we haven't been able to take care of it in the past. Why? We haven't had the money. And so we're going to try to stop the water from coming in. We know how to do it. And then we're going to repair the damage where the water has already come in. You've seen it if you've been around the church much at all. We're going to try to make this a safer place for children and for adults to gather. We're going to try to make every classroom a place where children, youth, and adults can actually learn the way people learn in the 21st century, not the way they learned 50 years ago. And we're going to do a lot more. When you trade in this yellow card, you'll get a packet. It's got a whole list of projects. It's got a whole list of gifts. You can read that on your own. But the question arises, it may have arisen to you already, certainly does to me, if gifts are given so that we share that with others, why are we spending all this money on ourselves? That's a very good question. Part of that can be answered by saying we still want a place where we can host folks who are experiencing homelessness in Room of the Inn. We still want a place where 12-step groups can meet. We still want a place where the Sunny Day group giving respite to caregivers of persons with dementia can still gather. We still want a place where we can study and learn and worship and be formed into the image of Christ. You might compare this to prenatal care. I know that's a stretch in a couple of ways. One way is I am way out of my area of expertise here. As a male, I've observed it, but I've never experienced it. But we all know how important prenatal care is if healthy babies are to be born. The same principle applies when you get on an airplane. And the attendant comes on the loudspeaker and says, in case of an emergency and the oxygen masks drop down, put your own mask on first before you put the mask on your child. Is that selfish? No. Because if you pass out, you're of no good whatsoever to that child. If a mother doesn't take care of herself, if others don't see that she is taken care of, then the likelihood of a healthy birth is diminished. So this is taking care of this church that we have called mother for centuries and centuries and centuries. It's a little prenatal care. But it can't stop there, because you see, the gifts aren't just given for us. This is the place where we gather so we are inspired and educated and equipped to go out into the world to seek justice, do kindness, walk humbly with God, to serve those who are not served in any other way. If we don't do that, then we don't even need to be raising the money in the first place. The question is, what is God going to bring to birth next? If this is prenatal care, what will come out of this? The Interfaith Dental Clinic was birthed from this congregation. God can do it again. And I don't know what that is. And you don't know what that is. But we can figure it out. Because if we take care of this place, it's not just so we can have a pretty place to worship. It's not just so people will walk the halls and not notice where the water has come in and the pain is peeling. It is so we can have a place to equip us, to feed the hungry, to clothe the naked, to visit the sick and imprisoned, so we can do what Jesus called us to do. Jesus, in a way following in his mother's footsteps, received a great gift. That gift was the calling to show God's love to the whole world, to embody that love. And I'm sure he did not pray to be crucified. In fact, I have it on good authority that he prayed for that bitter cup to pass from him, if possible. He knew it would cost him something. And he knew that this gift was not just for himself. And he left us a meal to remind us. And the reason we invite everyone to this table, everyone to this meal, is because we believe that everyone in the world should have an opportunity to encounter the transforming presence of the love of God. And one way of doing that is to take a piece of bread, to take a cup of juice. It's the simplest thing in the world. But it's a reminder. This is my body. This is my blood. This cost me something. Jesus said yes. I'm of the opinion that he could have said no, forget this, and walk away. Wouldn't history be different? We wouldn't be here. But he didn't. He said yes. Because you see, the last word in Mary's story is not, how can this be? The last word in Mary's story, as in Jesus, is, let it be with me according to your word. Now, Mary takes care of herself. She goes to visit her cousin Elizabeth, an older relative. Never having had children, but 6 months ahead of her in the process. That's her prenatal care. But before any of that happens, she says, your will, not mine. Or perhaps that's what her son heard. Let it be with me according to your word. I believe we can say that as well. Thanks be to God.